everyone, and welcome back to the Your Biggest Fangirl podcast. I am one of your hosts, Victoria Male.
And I'm Kristen Chavez.
And today we are chatting with fellow fangirl Claire Hanscom. We're so excited to have Claire with us today to talk about a fandom that's new to us.
Claire Hanscom is the biggest West Wing fan you will ever meet. And we don't think that's an exaggeration. She has written about her love for a show in an op-ed for the Washington Post. She's created an anthology with essays from fellow fans. The show is also a major reason why she moved from the United Kingdom to Washington, D.C. In an essay of her anthology, Walk With Us, How the West Wing Changed Our Lives, Claire explores how this TV show has unexpectedly, improbably changed her life. She writes through her thoughts as saying, "When they ask you, in America, how you ended up here, you will hesitate slightly. You won't want to sound like some kind of weirdo." And we're all about fangirling here, so that definitely doesn't make you sound like a weirdo in our book.
Great, thank you.
Because, like Tori said, we actually haven't really seen the show before, but after reading your book, we're definitely interested. So,
yay.
Thank you for coming
Mission
on
accomplished.
And telling us all about this. Can you tell us a little bit about your love and your journey with the West Wing?
Back in 2007 or 8, my friends had been telling me that they knew about this show that they thought I should watch, The West Wing. And I was a bit like, American politics, I'm not that interested. So I was like, whatever, I don't really care about that stuff. Life was really busy. I didn't watch a ton of TV anyway. And then this one day, the TV that I did watch, I watched Friends a lot. Whenever I felt like down or just tired and wanted to watch something to have a laugh, I watched Friends. And so I borrowed my friend's DVD player to watch a Friends episode, and it happened to have a West Wing episode in it. So I put it on, and it was season 2, episode 5, and I just totally fell in love. I was like, this is smart and funny, and there are all these hot guys, and I didn't feel talked down to by the show. I found it interesting, and I didn't understand everything in it, which that was a draw in itself, something so intelligent that I would have to think about it and look things up and maybe rewatch stuff to try and understand it better.
That's so cool. So since you are not an American, what do you think makes a show about U.S. politics and the United States presidential administration accessible to people outside of the U.S.? And in Walk With Us, many of the non-American contributors highlighted the writing and characters. Do you think the strength of those characters was tied to their setting? Do you think we could have had these characters and these bonds in a different type of show?
I think that it's primarily a drama about relationships and friendships, and they just happen to work in the White House. So there's that aspect to it. A lot of, just like people loved ER, even if they didn't particularly like hospitals or want to be a doctor. A lot of it is to do with the relationships and the writing and the things that don't have to do with politics. But also, I'm a very idealistic person, and the idealism of the characters is definitely something that tapped into me at a gut level. And I think is one of the reasons that people all over the world really like it so much, because these are good people wanting to do good for their country, which we can all identify with on some level. Not necessarily all of us, but those of us who are fans of the West Wing can identify with it on some level. And what's really interesting is that Brits are not, we're pretty cynical as a whole. And a show like that could easily have been too schmaltzy or too, just too unreal to us. But because it was written so masterfully and acted so well and directed so well, it did manage to capture Brits in a way that a less good show about the same things might not have done.
Interesting.
Very cool.
Can you also tell us a little bit about the West Wing fandom? Because I think when we think about fandom, we tend to think about the large genre blockbuster types from with superheroes or fantasy series. So what is it like being in a fandom like the West Wing with a show that really reflects what's closer to home?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't really have an experience of other fandoms, so it's hard for me to compare it to other things. I am a member of various Facebook West Wing fan groups, and I'm a member of way too many of them. And the reason there are so many of them is because there used to be one big one, and the rule was no real life politics in this group. And people just were pathologically unable to keep to that rule. Like, it was incredible. At least once a day, somebody would post something about real life politics. And I love real life politics. and I love talking about that stuff, but I understand that it's fiction. I also sort of like escaping to that world and not having to think about the real world for a bit. And yeah, and so the woman who created that group in the end had enough and just closed it down. And so then they made a whole load of new groups. So there's that. It is difficult, I think, to keep it separate from the real world. And I'm sure there's an argument to be made that it shouldn't be kept separate. It should make us think about what's happening in the real world as well. So there's that side of it. And now some of the groups are, there's one called What Would Bartlett Do? That's much more geared towards intentionally talking about politics in the light of the West Wing. So there's that side of things.
And just so, and just for people who don't know the West Wing, Bartlett is President Bartlett.
And I should have said President Bartlett. That's actually a point of contention in the fandom. Should really say President Bartlett every time, but
Mr. President.
One of my questions is, so like, do you think there's like, is there a lot of like Tumblr activity and fan fiction in the West Wing fandom?
There actually is, yes. There's, I mean, I don't, as I said, I don't know how it compares to others, but yeah, there's a lot of Tumblrs, there's a lot of GIFs. I'm sort of good online friends with a girl who makes a lot of the GIFs. So every now and then, if I need one, I'm like, help, make this for me. So yeah, there's a lot of that stuff. I think there's also role-playing on Twitter, character role-playing on Twitter. That's a big-ish thing. And then, of course, there's the West Wing Weekly podcast as well, which has its own sort of sub. So there's fans of the West Wing. And then within that, there's also fans of the West Wing Weekly podcast, which is its own. It's taken on a life of its own.
I think just the idea of like a weekly podcast like that is really cool, just because it's been off the air for years too.
Yeah.
It's still just so ingrained for people and so important and contextual.
Yeah.
Having like the subset of fans really reminds me of, Chris and I are both big Harry Potter fans. And then I don't know if you've heard about a very Potter musical. So a bunch of college students from the University of Michigan made this Harry Potter parody musical. It became like this whole sensation. And it created this whole new like subgenre of fandom, of that fandom.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, we even have our own nickname and our own in-jokes, and even they often will coin their own words. So like that, there's a whole kind of in-joke, in-knowledge thing as well going on with that. So
very cool. Well, obviously you have to be a smart bunch to be a West Wing fan.
Yes, it's ridiculously nerdy and ridiculously smart as well, the guys. So it's Josh Molina, who was an actor on the show, and then Rishi Hirway, who is a podcast. He already has another podcast called Song Exploder, which is very popular. And he is also ridiculously smart. They both went to Yale and they're both sort of grammar geeks. And so they often go off on tangents, and some people complain about that. But for me, that's part of the deal, because I'm not just listening to it because I'm a fan of the West Wing. I'm also listening to it because I'm a fan of the West Wing Weekly itself.
Very cool. So we want to talk about Walk With Us. What inspired you to collect this anthology of essays?
So the West Wing changed my life. It made me start writing again. It eventually led to a move to DC. It got me interested in politics again, which I had been interested in when I was much younger and kind of lost sight of. And I knew anecdotally and on a gut level that I probably wasn't the only one. And I knew that DC was full of people who came to DC because of the show or got into politics because of the show. And for one of my assignments for my MFA in creative writing, I wrote a piece where I interviewed people about the impact of the show on their lives. And there were tons of stories out there. And so I decided I'd make it into a book.
So what was it like trying to gather those contributors? Like, was it people that you kind of met in real life, or people that you were already friends with online? Or were there any like surprising or interesting stories?
I found people I created a Twitter account solely for that purpose. And some of the West Wing character role play accounts retweeted some of that. So that was helpful for getting people to respond to me. I think I probably posted in all the West Wing Facebook groups and things like that. But if I was to do it now, and I hope that at some point I'll be able to do an updated longer version as well. If I was to do it now, I think it would be easier even to get the word out, because, well, people know about the book now. The Twitter account has 4,000 plus followers. So obviously I could tweet through that. It was so much fun. I spent hours on the phone with people, nerding out with them about their love of the show. I used essays that people submitted. And then I also spent time on the phone and then took quotes from interviews that I'd done with people. But yeah, I had some wonderful nerd times with people. And I think the most touching one was a lady whose daughter passed away, but who when she was alive was a huge West Wing fan and wanted to be an amazing speechwriter. She wanted to be Sam Seaborn. And it was just such a touching and lovely conversation that nearly, I think it did make me cry at the time.
So it's easy, as we discussed a little earlier, it's easy to get cynical when it comes to politics, no matter what your own views or who's in office. But the opposite is suggested by others in your book. Jenny Moore writes, "This is a show that upheld ideals and then put them in reach without being syrupy or compromising complexity or ambiguity. Others cite the show as their reason to get into public service or use it as a teaching aid for civics classes." Can you talk to that a bit about how impactful the show is and your experience seeing how it speaks to so many people?
Yeah, I think it's telling that, for example, you don't have to be a Democrat to be a fan of the show. Obviously, many of us are and do subscribe to those ideals. But there's something about even deeper than the ideals of left or right. It's the ideal of wanting to serve your country for the greater good of everybody in the country. I think that in general, the best of politics comes when that is what people's motivation is, regardless of whether they're left or right. And I think that the show really tapped into the idea that people can go and serve their country. So for example, there's a character in the second season, actually in the very first episode that I ever watched, was about a Republican lawyer who goes to work for the Bartlett White House, the Democratic Bartlett White House. And she goes out of a sense of duty because she wants to serve. And even though she doesn't agree with them, she feels the honor of being called to this. There's some great episodes there. And yeah, and the other great thing about it too, and the reason, well, possibly the reason why Republicans like the show too, is that the Republicans are, generally speaking, not portrayed as, you know, evil versus good. They're also portrayed as complex people with complex motivations. Just both sides are complex and idealistic and also cynical sometimes and also calculating sometimes. And there isn't a sense that, you know, are the characters that we love and whose side we're on are perfect and everybody else is evil. There's very much a lot of complexity in that. And I think that that's appealing because it, for a start, that's what life is like, and it doesn't treat us like idiots when we watch it. It really shows us the kind of nuance, and I think that that's part of its appeal as well.
As you're talking about kind of how people are viewing the West Wing and stuff like that, it kind of makes me think of maybe my relationship with Parks and Rec a little, which I'm not sure if you're too familiar with that. And obviously it's very different, or what I imagine to be different. Like, it's a comedy, it's a sitcom. You know, that show too has like a range of characters and people, and some things are played for laughs. But I think in that one, they're also very careful not to really assign any sort of political affiliations. You know, you have Leslie Knope, like, wanting to do good and do all of these good things that in some ways for me, like, made me feel... It made me care more about local government in particular.
Yeah.
That it's like the things that they do are important. We can't just forget about those elections too. And we need to be engaged with our community because
yeah.
of that. That was a lovely insight.
it's like is it dramatic Parks and Rec? That's what I want to know.
Well, there is definitely... So Donna Moss, who's one of my favorite characters, I don't want to say that she's Leslie Knope exactly, but they would definitely be best friends if they existed in the same universe. And also the thing with the West Wing that sometimes people forget or don't necessarily know is that there are some really comic moments too. And that one of the best things that Aaron Sorkin does is he really contrasts. There can be a really deep and hard and difficult episode with dealing with all kinds of issues. So, and then he'll pair that with moments of levity in the same episode. So one of the, I keep wanting to say one of the best episodes, but there are so many good ones. It's kind of silly to say that after a while, but one of the many good episodes is there's a whole plot where the president is deciding whether to pardon somebody who's on death row. And so it's very dark and dramatic and deep. And there's a lot of theological conversation happening and philosophical conversation happening. Meanwhile, Josh Lyman is lying on the floor, still passed out drunk from the night before, trying to meet somebody called Joey Lucas for the first time, who he thinks is a guy, turns out to be a woman who's deaf, but speaking through her interpreter, who's a man. So he kind of comes around and he's just confused by the whole thing. And it's one of the funniest scenes in the show. And in fact, Bradley Whitford always says it's one of his favorites to have filmed as well. And that's kind of in the middle of this deep and dark episode. So yeah, there are definitely elements of comedy to it. And yeah, I mean, if you like Parks and Rec, I'm sure that, well, I mean, I think everybody should try The West Wing anyway, but I'm sure that you would enjoy, at least, even if you don't love it like I do, I think that you would enjoy The West Wing.
Well, let's talk about Josh Lyman / Bradley Whitford.
In your piece for The Washington Post, you talk about your experience with having lunch with him. So what can you tell other fangirls to expect if they're going to participate in a charity auction for meet and greet like you did with Bradley?
So my experience was a little bit different because I actually found out about the auction after it had closed, which was, I can't even begin to explain how devastated I was. This felt like it had been my moment made for me. This was the reason I'd moved to DC. And I was so sad when it turned out I'd missed out. So I emailed Charity Buzz, the website that it was on, and basically asked if there was any chance he would do another one. And they said that if I would match the top donation, then he would do another one. So that's what I did. Obviously, there was no question of me not doing that. So yeah. I don't have advice from that point of view, other than I suppose one thing is to set yourself a limit, how much are you willing to pay or able to pay for this, essentially this fantasy to come to life, because it can end up being really expensive. That said, though, it's also the thing with Charity Buzz is you're also contributing to a good cause. So that's helpful.
Do you have any advice or tips for fangirls when they're meeting their favorites? Like, we really appreciated your insights on the actual auction, but then like you're sitting there at a table and Josh Lyman / Bradley Whitford is sitting across from you.
I mean, I don't know that I have advice, but I can tell you what I did, which is that I basically told him, I can't believe I'm here. This is so surreal. And he just kind of laughed. And then I just felt more at ease because I think then it was just out in the open. And, you know, he knew that I'd paid lots of money to be there. And probably knew that I had begged them to do a second lunch, you know, all this kind of thing. So it's not like it was news to him that I was kind of amazed to be there. But there's just something about having it out in the open that just kind of then you can just have a conversation after that. That said, though, that was because it was an extended time. I wouldn't recommend you lead with that when you meet someone and it's a quick photo op. You probably don't want to say, I can't believe I'm here. This is amazing. Because you, not that it's wrong. It's not wrong to say that, of course, but I feel like they probably hear that all the time. And you've said in previous episodes that it's good if you can say something different that they don't hear all the time. So, you know, just saying, I'm a big fan of your work, or I can't believe I'm meeting you, is not necessarily the thing to lead with. But in the case of a long sit down lunch where you need to kind of be a bit more relaxed about the whole thing, I think it's good to have it out in the open.
I think that was great advice. So I don't know what you're talking about. I know, because you've met a lot of basically the whole cast, right? Or many members of the cast.
Yeah, pretty much at this point. Yeah. Whenever they do plays in New York, or when I lived in Europe, when they did plays in London or Brussels or Dublin, places that I would go to them and try and do stage door. So I've done a few of those. In the last couple of years, there's been a few West Wing or West Wing adjacent events as well. And then Melissa Fitzgerald, who plays Carol on the show, is she works with an organization called Justice for Vets, and a lot of the cast got together to do a PSA for the organization. And then they had an event where they launched the PSA. So that wasn't a public event, but I, through contacts I have, was able to go in a completely legit way. And I was writing for a magazine at the time, so I wrote a story for them. So I got to go to that and see them there as well.
That's awesome. Textbook landing fangirl with professional life. And I love it.
Yeah, it was great.
It's great that the cast is still coming together for those kinds of events and festivals. But we read that you were organizing the first ever like West Wing only convention. Can you tell us about that and what it's like diving into convention organizing?
So I actually have no experience with conventions. I haven't even ever been to one. So this is quite an adjustment. But actually, it was through my book, Walk With Us, I got in touch with a girl called Kat Smith. And she was chatting to her friend Clay last summer about having a West Wing conference. And her friend Clay has experience of organizing other kinds of conventions and conferences too. The work is in fits and starts, but I'm currently basically trying to invite as many people as I can, as in special guests and actors and writers and people, not just people involved with the show, but maybe people involved in real life politics, people who have worked in the White House, people like that. So it's interesting and fun and exciting. And yesterday I emailed one of the members of the cast, and she was a pretty minor character, but some of the minor characters are really beloved, and she's one of those. And I emailed her not having any idea, because you never know, you send these emails out into the ether, but like 2 hours later she tweeted that she hoped to be there, and so that was so exciting. So it's so much fun to see this come together. And the convention itself, it's called the West Wing Weekend. It's not dependent on special guests. We're doing a program where we're basically running the show. The people who are going to be there are going to put on all kinds of things, from butter carving competitions to trivia to panels on all kinds of academic subjects. So even if none of the special guests came, it would still be an amazing weekend. But obviously, if they come, it will be, you know, even better.
Okay, so now we're going to have a little bit of fun with you. We're going to play our fandom Would You Rather game.
Yep.
Claire's ready. Okay. Would you rather watch your ship be realized in canon, but read no fan fiction about them ever again, or read unlimited fan fiction about them, but never see them together in canon?
This is an easy one for me. I definitely would prefer canon. I like fan fiction and I think it's fun, but I want to be able to see it on screen. I want that to be the definitive version of what happened.
And then what's your ship?
Josh and Donna from the West Wing.
Would you rather your show be canceled at its peak or have it drag on for too many seasons?
This is an interesting one, because my instinct is definitely cancel at its peak. But if they had done that for the West Wing, they might have canceled it when Aaron Sorkin left at the end of season 4. Season 5 and 6, generally not loved by fans. It's still better than most TV by a long shot, but it's not early the West Wing. It's not, a lot of people don't really consider it to be real West Wing. But you get through season 6 and into season 7, and by middle of season 7, it gets really good again. And so by the end, I was like, oh, you could keep going. This is great. I'm really hooked. It's like, well, it some ways did drag on and then came out the other end. But it's also good that it came to a nice organic end at the end as well, with the end of the Butt administration. So that probably doesn't answer the question. Sorry.
Perfect. Because honestly, that's how I feel too. Because I say, let it drag on, because it might get better again.
But it almost never does, right?
I think West Wing's probably an outlier in that situation. Would you rather wait in line for your favorite panel only to miss it and come back next year? Or would you rather meet your icons, but then you're banned for life?
So what kind of meeting are we talking? And is it a good meeting?
You know, it's like a good kind of like run-of-the-mill meeting. Like, hey, I'm a fan. Let's take a selfie. And then it's not lunch with Bradley Whitford.
I think I would still take the meeting and then be banned for life, because you can always watch panels on TV and stuff. Meeting them might never be possible again, for as far as you know. So take it while you can get it. That's what I think.
So we know that your OTP is Josh and Donna from the West Wing. So, would you rather be best platonic friends with your OTP, or date the one that you desire most, but be the reason that they break up?
I definitely would want to be best platonic friends with them, because I think they belong together to the extent that, I'm sorry if this is a massive spoiler for anyone who hasn't watched it, but it's been a few years, so hopefully you'll get over it. Josh dates Amy at one point, who's played by Mary Louise Parker, who's amazing, but she's not Donna, and it's not okay, even though arguably she's great for him and in some ways a great match for him. Like, no, he has to be with Donna. That is just how this works. So I'd never want to get in the way of that. But if I hung out with him, I'd still get to, like, you know, look at him occasionally. And then maybe I could date Sam Seaborn and we could double date. So that's what I would choose.
I love the double date option.
Yeah. And Sam Seaborn is not a bad looking man, because that's where Low. So I like your strategy there.
Thanks.
Would you rather an alternate universe where Harry Potter is a squib, or an AU where he becomes a dark wizard?
So I think that I would want him to be a squib, because I think that's got a lot of potential for humor. And I also think that Hermione would have to rescue him all the time, and that could be really fun to watch.
Cool. That's like a lesser picked choice. So,
and I love the inclusion of Hermione, because I think I hadn't thought of that before. And I'm like, yes, I want my girl Hermione saving the day.
Because she doesn't do that enough when he's.
Yes.
Okay. So you also have a new book coming up titled Unscripted Through Unbound, with some West Wing perks if you donate and support Claire. And I love the description for Unscripted, which reads, "No one is a bigger fan of actor Thomas Cassidy than Libby. No one. That's why she's totally going to marry him. So this is me. So you're writing about me. What can you tell us about the book and how it relates to fangirling?
I was inspired for the book by my own experience, as you can probably guess. This is actually my third novel. The first one that I wrote, let's just say that one of the characters was possibly heavily influenced by Josh Lyman / Bradley Whitford. And so then I kind of started daydreaming about putting him in the movie and maybe I could write the screenplay with him and all this kind of stuff. And so the third book is basically taking that a bit further. The third book, Unscripted, which is the one that's coming out with Unbound. It's about a young woman. I made her 10 years younger than me because I figured that people would not believe that someone my age would be so fangirly. So, I mean, we know that's not the case. And so this young woman, Libby, is in love with this guy who was on a critically acclaimed show, but not about politics, about teachers. And she decides she wants to write a novel and write the screenplay with him. And she thinks that they'll fall in love as they write the screenplay and she'll get to marry him and live happily ever after. That is her plan. Parts of that happen, parts of it don't. There's three other main characters in the novel. You get four people's perspectives. One of them is a friend of hers from college who has always quite liked her. And then you have Tom, who's the main actor, and then his long ago ex-girlfriend, who Libby also knows through complicated situations. So really it's partly about she's in love with him, she thinks, but is she really? Does she really know him? Is he really real? Is the person that she thinks she's in love with actually real? And what's it going to be like when she meets him? And what if he actually has a real life that doesn't include her? Because surprisingly enough, Hollywood actors, generally speaking, don't hang out with fans all the time. So it's kind of exploring all of that. But at the same time, it's hopefully funny in places, but it's not, it doesn't poke fun at her. It's hopefully an empathetic portrayal of somebody who, for whom a show has really changed her life. So she's a teacher partly because the show kind of made her want to be a teacher in the same way that the West Wing made a lot of people want to be in politics. It's fangirling for her, as for me, is the beginning of all kinds of adventures and misadventures.
I can't wait. So where can we go and support the novel?
So the easiest place is if you head to unscriptednovel.com, and that will take you to a page so you can pre-order, and also just you can pre-order and add extra goodies as well. Like you can get a Walk With Us book, or you can get other West Wing related goodies and t-shirts and things like that.
Thank you so much for coming onto this podcast.
This was really fun. I love what you guys are doing. So
okay, so then how can everyone support your awesome podcast and what you're doing?
So my podcast is not fangirl related, although it kind of is, because it's about books. It's called the BritLit Podcast, and it's about books and publishing from a British perspective. And basically, I use it as an excuse to contact all the authors whose books I love. So it is kind of fangirly from that point of view. So yeah, if you like books, find BritLit Podcast on whatever podcatcher you use. Find BritLit Podcast on Twitter and Instagram as well.
And then we can find you at Purple Claire on Twitter, correct?
Yes.
Claire, this has just been lovely. And thank you so much for opening our eyes to the world of the West Wing.
You'll have to report back if you watch it and if you like it.
Yeah, we totally will. Thank you again for coming on. Support all of Claire's amazing, awesome endeavors. And while you're at it, if you could give us a rating, review, and subscribe to us, we will love you forever.
Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at YBFG Podcasts. You can find us on Tumblr too at yourbiggestfangirl.tumblr.com. And you can check out show notes, bonus content, and more at our website, yourbiggestfangirl.com. Thank you again.
Thanks. This was so much fun.
Our theme song is The California Lullaby Instrumental by Josh Woodward, used under Creative Commons Attributions 4.0 International License.